Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm your host, Summer Brooks, and this week we are continuing our independent horror entertainment coverage. And we have an independent feature that will be in theaters and on digital platforms next week, November 13th. And we have an interview about an animated feature that you can find online right now. It's the continuation of a web series you could find on YouTube. We'll have links to that. Because just like the question I asked in the contest that's currently running on the website, do you prefer your horror all concentrated up into October and around Halloween? Or do you prefer your horror spread out throughout the entire year? Like, find a sprinkle of powdered sugar on all your entertainment during the year. So we'll get started with our double feature of interviews this week, right after this. Hi, welcome back for more Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my guest is writer-director Eli Morgan Gesner, whose newest project is a horror thriller called Condemned. Welcome to the show, Eli.
It's good to be here.
Eli is the writer and director of this intriguing little, I don't know, what would you call it, fish out of water, disaffected youth zombie movie?
Nailed it. I think we should open up an entire section at Blockbuster with that thing. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's a fish out of water movie, and definitely disenfranchised, disenchanted youth, and you know, infectious horror thriller. I mean, it's a funny movie to me. It's an absurdist comedy. That's kind of what I was going for. But, maybe I just have a twisted sense of humor.
Depraved senses of humor can come in handy as a cathartic release these days. That's my theory. I'm sticking to it.
Oh, yeah, well, that's my trick. That, you know, I got to laugh to keep from crying. That's sort of, I had to think I have that tattooed across my heart.
So give our listeners a little synopsis of what Condemned is about.
Oh, well, it's about a rich girl named Maya who lives in an affluent seaside neighborhood, and she's really miserable with her life in her giant mansion with her rich parents because her rich parents just argue and fight all the time. So, I think she has little experience with the world, and fed up, she goes to see her boyfriend, who has earlier moved to New York City to pursue his dream of becoming a big rock and roller in a rock group. And I think he's probably been trying to make his situation in New York City sound better than it actually is. So in a state of distress, she runs away from home to go be with her boyfriend. And after a night of drinking, heads back to their house to discover that him and his bandmates are all squatting in an abandoned building. And she's sort of taken back by it at first, but ultimately embraces it. And then once we're inside and start learning about the building, we see that the building is filled with a strange array of characters from the darkest corners of society who don't like one another, but for circumstances are all forced to live in this abandoned building. Little does anyone know in the building that all of the garbage and filth that they've been throwing down the drain is now all accumulating in the basement because the plumbing is broken. And in basement alone, the assorted drugs and slime and puke and piss all start festering together and make an infected gas that leaks back upwards and starts making everyone go a little bit crazy and have hallucinations. And, you know, comedy ensues, essentially.
So as the writer of this shall we say, cornucopia of destructive and self-destructive tropes. What made you hit on this particular storyline?
Well, I'm born and raised in New York City, and disturbing movies in general. You know, my mind is always wandering and coming up with ideas, and but something that's just stuck with me my entire life is living in an apartment building. You can hear all your neighbors, you know, and sometimes you can clearly hear your neighbors, like, oh, you know, Phyllis in 4C is crying. I wonder if her cats didn't die. And although you can hear people screaming bloody murder and you're not sure if who it is, and you know, it's and in your mind you concoct all these storylines, you know. So that has always been a device that, you know, I've wanted to work with, and it seems ideal for a contained thriller. And so that was, you know, kind of compartmentalized and put in its place as like a foundation for a story. And then also the challenge as a New Yorker of trying to make a horror movie in the in an environment that's really just not suited to it. Movies are always in isolated places. Texas Chainsaw Massacre is in the middle of nowhere. The Thing is in the middle of Antarctica. The Cabin in the Woods is in the cabin in the woods. You know, in New York City, if you like pull out a knife and try to kill somebody, someone's going to scream, and you know, some fat boys and garbage men are going to come running to stop you. You know, it's actually probably the safest place, you know, for all of the bad rep it gets, you know. So that was sort of how, you know, I approached this challenge, you know. That's where it all comes from. And the characters are all based on actual people I know or events I've heard about that I've seen firsthand. So, you know, there's little bits of truth and everything going on in there. It's not these aren't just, you know, what can I do to make something really offensive or crazy? It's not really like that. It's more so that, you know, 15 years ago on the street, I saw a bunch of Hasidic teenage boys getting money together to go and approach a transvestite prostitute. And I was like, I don't think these Hasids know that this is a dude.
Oh, geez.
You know? Yeah, so it's like little moments like that away in my pockets, and you know, they get leached out of my pencil point somewhere along the lines.
So, what was the appeal of making a horror movie where people are literally being driven insane and shall we say more destructive than they usually are by their own creation?
Well, I mean, I think that's humanity. You know, I think that on occasion we are capable of great things, but I think more so than not, we are sort of victims of our own self, of our own condition. And that's, you know, it's a horror movie, and it's something I wanted to state. You know, I'm not the type of person who's going to ever be able to produce The Sound of Music or something like that, you know, just because of my own life experiences and view of the world. I always take a, you know, a dark but hopeful tone. As I said, you know, I have to laugh at you from crying. I've definitely somebody who's experienced a lot of tragedy in my life, more so I would think than most people. But you know, I think a lot of people would say I'm one of the happiest people out there, and I think it's because specifically, you know, even just being I was born in 1970 in New York City and grew up in New York at its worst point, probably one of its worst points, and the stuff that you just see even as a kid going off to school, you know, gangs stabbing each other and homeless people and prostitution and garbage piling up and bureaucracy and crooked cops and drug usage, I mean, that's kind of the world that I was bred in. So, you know, that's kind of what I'm always aware of. In fact, you know, nowadays the world's become so homogenized and pleasant It's almost like me and my friends who are of my age and grew up in New York City, we're like confident we all have post-traumatic stress disorder, you know? And I mean that as a joke, and I mean that for real, you know? And we kind of walk around New York right now like, this isn't right. Like, someone's trying to set us up for something, you know?
They're trying to lull you into accepting the zombie apocalypse when it arrives on your doorstep.
Oh, yeah, I'm prepared. Trust me. When that day happens, everyone needs to get behind me. I'll take care of it all. So, yeah, as far as, you know, to get into it with you, as far as, like, the structure of how come this isn't just like, oh, look at Bill, he's been bitten, now he's a zombie. This was actually where, you know, and I had all these little ideas pocketed away, but when I really was like, you know what, this is what I want to do. And quite frankly, I don't know if I really succeeded in it. Because it just, you know, it just turned into, I have to go make this movie, and a lot of circumstantial limitations were set on me. But what when I was a kid, I really loved zombie movies and always have.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember watching Dawn of the Dead in the theaters when I was 8 years old, 9 years old, whenever it came out. No, when did it come out? 80? I don't know. So I was a young child. And I remember specifically, and you might recall as well, Summer, the scene where one of the heroes of the film has been wounded and he's struggling as the zombies are coming behind him, and he goes into the elevator and the zombies come in and the elevator door closes and you're like, oh, they're going to eat him. And then the elevator goes, bing, down one floor. He comes out as a zombie and he's totally fine. And I remember being in the theater and going, that's fucking bullshit. I was like, he's still warm. Like, why aren't the zombies eating him? You know, and it was when I made that acknowledgement, I realized that all zombie movies are binary. They are all us versus them stories. And it's very, very clear cut. And I have a problem with that because we all like to, you know, we all need to have a very clear cut enemy. You know, it's the Nazis. It's the terrorists, however it goes. And in the zombie apocalypse, what could be easier? It's The Walking Dead. Let's shoot them, you know? And I think, actually, to bring it up, just as I said it, The Walking Dead actually does address that, you know, we are also partly the problem here. But, again, theatrical dimensionality to it is just two-dimensional. So what I wanted to do was I thought it would be crazier if the people who were infected actually were aware of their surroundings, which I guess does happen for a little while in some zombie movies where they're like, oh, my God, I've been bitten. Don't come near me, Bill. I love you. This is terrible, you know. but I wanted to do something more where the people come in and out of this situation. So it's like people are trying to kill you, and then they're trying to plead with you to help them. And then also I wanted, and I think this was also important semiotically, was to, you know, clearly state that that nowadays that we're not really 100% sure what's right and what's wrong and who's good and who's bad, and that, you know, there's one scene someone's trying to stab you, and then another scene they're like, you know, trying to talk to you about the weather, and or don't know that something's wrong or realize that something's wrong, and sort of induce this matrix of you know, of unknown, or at least of some sort of dramaturgical element to it, you know, that there's so much more to be explored here than just, you know, there's the bad guy, shoot the bad guy, we're the good guys, run for your life. You know, that's something I didn't want to do. I think that a lot of people see it and they just, I don't know if I expressed it that well, it might have been a failure in my storytelling. I think if I could do it again or do a sequel, I would definitely exploit that far more than I did in this film, because, you know, the way that it is now, it just seems like, oh, it's a battle royale. Everyone's trying to kill each other, which is true, you know. But, you know, and there's little moments of tenderness and tragedy and sweetness and comedy in there. So that's basically really the what I was trying to accomplish. And make a fun movie. That's really what I wanted to accomplish, period. Our marching orders, our mission statement was, what's the most fun thing we could do here? What's the most interesting and entertaining thing we could accomplish here? So that's what hopefully I did that.
Awesome. So a sequel is something you would want to do.
I have a sequel written. So I would, but I don't. It is the evolution of this story and more so based on its the subtext and the message of the film. I don't. If someone came to me and said, like, here's another little bunch of money, and we want you to make the same film, except this time it's going to be in an abandoned hospital. Like, that's not what I'm trying to. That's not what I'm interested in doing. I'm interested in taking the idea to the next level and exploring the themes of the film in much more depth. Dun dun dun! Without revealing too much.
We will keep an eye out for the sequel. People can check out Condemned on November 13th in theaters and on digital in various platforms. We will have all of those links for you. Thank you for your time today, Eli.
Yes, Summer, for sure. Thanks for your time and your interest.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
You're home from the comic book store with your favorite titles. Wouldn't they read better while listening to Krypton Radio?
Hello and welcome back for more Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my guests now are Greg Anson and Michael Neal. They are, I'm going to classify them as YouTube troublemakers. They have a web series called Infinite Santa 8000, which is an animated short form series that I suggest everyone who's interested in the weird and the post-apocalyptic animated mayhem should definitely go check out. But they also have a feature film continuing Santa's adventures in a post-apocalyptic world. So welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks, Summer.
So first, how did Infinite Santa 8000 even come to be?
Well, I mean, Mike and I made a movie called The Drive-In Horror Show. We've been working together for almost 15 years now, but we made a movie about, what it came out, 211, 209-ish. Yeah. Like, you know, between the release. And all during it, we talked about the next project and talked about everything. And there's a thing called an evergreen project, which means, Mike, you can explain that more, I think.
Yeah, sure. And evergreen, the idea is that you make a film that, you know, once a year will be relevant, like the Tales of Halloween that just came out. Mm-hmm. You know, next year that'll be relevant again. If you have a film that maybe hits once, then its time might be over, unless you get like a hit that just keeps kind of growing. So we thought that an evergreen would be a fun and maybe a more logical thing to do, you know, if we're trying to have some longevity.
Yeah, and you know, we're just independent filmmakers, and I think we thought about some, because we did music videos and music with the Drive-In Horror Show, and I have a music background, and we thought maybe we'd make a like Christmas parody record with some videos or something, but like it's just been done so well that we couldn't kind of compete with what's out there. So somehow it turned into an animated series with Santa Claus and the post-apocalypse. And, you know, on the Drive-In Horror Show, we had a lot of good special effects people who are also artists and could do drawing, and they're tattoo people, and kind of just pulled some talents and just started taking off with the web series. And with the way we use After Effects, Adobe After Effects, and mm-hmm. the way it works now is you can add lights to stuff. So it's not just what our colorists and animators do. We can make it look like a real setting. And Mike has a big background in that. So that's the other thing that we really added with this kind of 2D, not simple animation, but we're not doing these crazy worlds, but we're able to light it to give these amazing effects. And it takes a ton of time to do, but it's just a couple of us, and it's a lot of fun. I mean, I think that's how it kind of snowballed, is once we saw how it looked and showed it to some of the people involved, they were like, this is just fantastic, guys. And you're like, you think? So we just kept doing it.
So how did the fan feedback affect the story you had planned out for the original miniseries, the original season one?
I don't think at all, Mike, because we kind of did it, and it was such a quick production. Like, at least for the first one, we started it, like, I think I want to say in August. And, like, then just, you know, went balls to the wall. And, like, at points we were, like, animating right up to, like, till we released it, like, one a week. But as it went on, there's lots of feedback of, you know, other holiday characters we should get involved. That's more in the movie. That turned more in the movie.
We actually kind of did the movie because of our feedback. We had people asking for more content, you know, bigger action scenes. You know, we had a handful of fight scenes a lot of time in the web series, you know, that were much more animation intensive, more characters, more blood and gore. And, you know, those shots take time. And we thought that let's try to do a more epic story and stuff with bigger action scenes and bigger everything. And so that's kind of where the movie came from. That, I think, was a direct result of fan reaction. If it had kind of fallen flat, I don't know that we would have made a movie about it.
That was my question. The movie, where'd the movie come from? But the fans wanted more, and you said, here you go.
And I think it was that we could actually do it. Like, I mean, starting in this process, I mean, we, you know, the web series and YouTube has evolved since we kind of, it's, you know, come even more crazy. But I think part of the reason we started at small, Mike, was because we didn't know if we could do it. You know, it's like, and get the, you know, we want to get a certain level of quality. We don't want to put something that's crummy out there. And we were able to do that. So that's why another reason why we took the bigger step of the movie, because, I mean, the web series was nothing compared to the movie. I mean, there's a scene where we wanted to do the speeder scene from Star Wars, you know, or like, there were just so many things that, because it's animation, if you can think of it, you can do it, you know, you just have to draw it.
Yeah. And then also with the animation software, kind of conceptually figure out how to do it. Like with that speeder scene Greg mentioned, out of all the stuff we did, that was probably the one where we kind of had to invent ways to do it with our particular setup. You know, that was something we hadn't really done at all in the web series and was a bit of a leap for us. But, you know, we learned over the 13 web series episodes kind of what was possible with the software, and we're able to figure going in that, like, you know, we can do this. And it's something that we didn't do at all in the web series. We had some traveling stuff, the Santa motorcycle, which is pretty fun and was very satisfying, but nothing quite like that. So, the web series is kind of a big learning experience. I remember by the very end of the 13th episode of the web series, having some ideas about lighting where I was like, ooh, wait a minute, we could do this instead. And like, oh, never mind, we're done with it. But, you know, that kind of stuff helped push us with our technique into the film. I was really glad to be able to test out some of that stuff.
Awesome. Now, where can people find the film to enjoy it for themselves after they've seen season one?
Right through the YouTube channel. There's a link. It's all on VOD, iTunes, Amazon. But if you're on our YouTube channel, that you can just go to a movie thing, and I think it's for like $2 or $3. You can watch it through one of our partners. We have a VOD deal, and they kind of take care of all the iTunes. It's out there. If you search it, it'll come up in about 8 places for sale.
Excellent. We'll have. Yeah. All those links for everybody, but what are you planning for a follow-up? Is there going to be another movie? Is there going to be a season 2?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. Mike just sent me the first version. Okay. So we're big dreamers. So we're I'm a big dreamer. Our goal, like after this Christmas, you know, we want to rev it up and get our fans and get new fans. We are going to shop a live action, like, TV series of this, because we think with Mad Max and The Walking Dead, this would be like perfect. Like, people would just love this. And I would think movies are kind of, we're in the age of the TV series. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're putting our creative efforts for, you know, in the beginning part of next year. And actively probably hire work with some entertainment lawyers and people we know to actually get it to some producers who could actually get this done.
And, you know, I think part of the appeal of live action, too, is that we're definitely into blood and gore. I mean, especially from our horror film. And I'm definitely as much of a gore hound as anybody. So we tried to push it as far as we can in the movie, especially. And we just realized that, like, you can only get so gross in animation. But I think any of this stuff, live action, would just be utterly disgusting. I mean, I just think it would be so much fun. I'd love to see that, you know?
And we've made, like, in one of our main goals in writing, I mean, we have, like, 8,000 years of history. We've kind of written the backstory. So, you know, we didn't just start at whatever. But one thing that we always, Santa's like a computer, but he's always what you would think of the Hallmark Santa. Like, yeah, he does get upset, but, like, he's, like, we'll always kind of keep him that way. Like, I mean, he might have up and downs, but he's never, like, so I think that's, like, and he's always looking to save the Christmas spirit. You know, that's kind of the main thing of the show. With all the other stuff going on.
A live action series would definitely be, I want to see how you get the bike in the live action, how you design that bike. Because that's a seriously custom bike there.
That's exactly.
Yeah, that bike would be awesome.
That's exactly why I'm the right people. Like, I think in all the new Mad Max, those were all real vehicles. None of those were CGI. I mean, people, I'm not a car guy, but you talk to some people and, oh, that's a 440F, you know, whatever. I'm like, okay, you know, that's why I would love to see that.
Cool, because I know there was a live action fantasy series, Rift World Chronicles, that came out earlier this year. It's on YouTube. I think it's 8 episodes, about 5 to 6 minutes each. And I wanted more. And so if El Rey Network doesn't pick you guys up, look to YouTube. Go back to YouTube.
Yeah. And there's just a lot of stuff that, you know, we're not giving up on the project. So it's like, it's just the more creative we can be with it, you know, we'll see where it turns out. I mean, I'd love to be on El Rey Network. That's like, I'm like, oh, they always show the best. They don't have that in the East too much, or they hadn't, but I watch it out in LA all the time.
It's a fun channel, but have you thought about doing any sort of supplementary materials for Infinite Santa 8000 and like graphic novels?
Oh, yes.
Oh, sure. I mean, it would lend itself great to graphic novel. I mean, like Greg said too, you know, we have, you know, an 8,000 year history here. So it'd be easy to drop in on other parts of the timeline, other stories, you know, other characters. We have a lot of characters in it that, like, for example, there's an Easter Bunny bounty hunter in the movie, and he's in there. Yeah, it's ridiculous. And he's in there briefly, but he has a history, and any of those spinoff characters would be really fun to write. We've had a couple of characters and other unproduced scripts that I think would be really fun to get into. So yeah, I think it would lend itself really well.
Mike and I, you know, just like being any filmmakers, we got about 5 irons in the fire with different projects, and depending on the level, and one project that we hope we get signed to be a huge thing. It's been a big thing in shopping it. Like, we might have to actually produce. We have some graphic novels to have a live action thing made. You know, sometimes the producers want to actually see that. That's why I think a lot get done on the independent level, just because it really gives a director or the people involved a no brain, almost shot for shot, of how their movie's going to look.
Cool. Excellent. So let's tell everybody all the links where you can find everything. We've got the YouTube channel. We've got the website. What else do we have out there?
Those are probably the two best, the website and the YouTube. You know, through our website, you can get to our Twitter, our Facebook, our IMDb, our YouTube. And the biggest thing is, guys, just please subscribe to us on YouTube. And we haven't worked it fully out, but I know this winter we're going to be running a contest for some cool Infinite Santa merchandise and other merchandise we have. So, you know, keep posted to all our social media for that.
So we definitely send some people over to check out your contest when it goes live, because everybody loves free funky swag.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, so do I. I have tons of it.
We got a cool thing coming this. Hopefully, they come in time for this Christmas as one of the gifts. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, me too. I was going to add too that, you know, we're doing a lot of supplemental material right now, behind the scenes videos, actual animation tutorials showing people how we use the software and what we do. We just put a music video out, behind the scenes interviews and stuff like that.
And the big bunny from our movie has his own little web, like, it's, I wouldn't call it a web series. I'd call it more of a, he's trapped in time and he either likes things or doesn't like things and ends up smushing them usually. So it's a little fun animation we've been doing, and to keep some of the favorite characters going from the movie. I mean, people just want to see him.
Yeah, and we have a schedule now. So every Wednesday we have a new Infinite Santa video coming out, and every Saturday we have a new Big Bunny Trapped in Time coming out. So, you know, the big thing is, like Greg said, for people to come and subscribe, like the videos, share them. I mean, the biggest thing is that's changed since Infinite Santa came out.
Or if you don't like them, rail on them, please, you know? I love
that. Yeah, sure. Yeah, whatever. Feedback is good. Spread the word. It's all good. The big thing that's changed with YouTube is that the name of the game now is subscriptions and likes and views. And that's it. You know, that's what YouTube pays attention to. That's what other people pay attention to. That's what bumps you up in searches, gets you featured on other websites, Twitter, whatever. So that's the biggest thing people can do for us. And give us feedback, too. Send us a message, you know, tweet us. I mean, anything. I'll talk to anybody. I love to hear from people. You know, you don't always get a lot of feedback from this kind of stuff. You know, we'll have 500,000 views on one of our episodes, and not every single person writes a comment. And I'd love to hear what each person says. You know, I mean, how else would we know it?
Yeah, and if you hear this or hear something else, and you're in, I mean, Mike and I, well, another reason of how we started it is we were at the Austin Film Festival, and was it Jay? Was that his name?
Jay Edwards from Aqua Teen.
Aqua Teen. Ron Howard was giving a lecture. He was giving a lecture. We went to see him, and there were five people there at the lecture. And I raised my hand, and I'm like, well, how do you do this? And he's like, we scan it in. We use Photoshop, and we use After Effects. And Mike and I looked at us and each other like, we know all that stuff. We do that. So that's basically was, as we were thinking of this idea, that was another reason. We saw someone who did it on a show, and like he's like, there's like three of us who do this show, or five, or whatever. And it's like, we go crazy, but that's how we do it. So it's like, you know, if you're a filmmaker out there, contact us or hear by us and just do it. You know, be passionate about it.
It sounds like that your animation tutorials videos could take off too.
Yeah, I'm. You know, that would be great. We just did a new one that has had a really good response so far. People seem to really be digging it. And yeah, I love that. I mean, I want to share what we know. And I know that I learned a lot of this, and Greg did, just kind of by figuring stuff out. And I've watched a lot of tutorials. You know, I try to do these in the way that I find the most helpful, coming at it from somebody else. And just a lot of things to learn, always. A lot of things for me to learn, too, you know, from
and
other people.
These tutorials aren't really Mike's been leading them up, but they're not necessarily they're a little bit advanced. So if you know a few things about the program, we're not going to sit like you have to know a few things about the program. Or you don't, because Mike will tell you where to learn about it. But it's a little bit more for someone who's might have jumped in a little bit, where, like, you know, you can find a lot of other good tutorials on YouTube of, you know, how do you set a keyframe or something like that, where Mike might go into a more advanced topic with keyframes and graphs and all this stuff that once you start using After Effects, you're like, oh, this is how you can make that fluid motion or do that and not kill yourself.
Well,
no, I got all technical there.
No, so. It's like I know we have a lot of people who are interested in making their own short featured content, either animation or live action. Everybody wants to start making their own stories because the stories that are being made for television and for movies aren't always appealing to everybody. So they're like, you know, I'm sick of not seeing the story I want. I'm going to go make my own.
Yep.
Yeah, and I think that's great. And for someone that's interested in doing that, whether you watch our tutorials or not, I mean, I would just say, you know, there's no reason not to do it. And you have time on your side if you're not trying to get this done on a budget or a deadline. Do it right. Tell the stories you want to tell. And don't be afraid to try new things or make mistakes. I mean, especially with the animation software, you're not going to break anything. It's like, you know, we've done stuff that hasn't worked, but that's how we get to the stuff that does. And, you know, there's no one sitting there saying, you know, you idiot, you did this wrong or whatever. You know, you just you do it and keep doing it. And I think it's a great time we live in. It's really the challenge now is to get your stuff seen. There's so much good stuff out there. My God, all over YouTube, amazing animation. I find it every day. And I try to tell other people about it too, you know, so that's kind of the name of the game right now for sure.
Yep.
Excellent. And just one thing to add, if you're a filmmaker, I mean, you know, you don't necessarily have to have all the big ideas right off the start. You know, I know, I live in Los Angeles, Mike's in Boston. It's a little bit easier in these cities, but go volunteer on a film on a Saturday or try and work as a PA. And sometimes you might I worked in studios for years, and it's seeing 100 bad bands play that you know what's good. So it's like, do it for yourself, but also to go, a film is a big group experience. Go work on a film and get into it and see what parts you like of it. Cause it's not how it looks, you know, things, you know, hurry up and wait is the biggest thing we say. And if you have no patience, you can't make films. I mean, everything's just hurry up. Like it's like, 8 hours to do makeup, 10 hours to do makeup. It's like, hurry up and wait, you know? So.
Well, thank you so much, Greg and Michael, for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We will have links to the Infinite Santa Season 1 on YouTube. The main website is InfiniteSanta8000.com. Is that right?
Yeah, or just Infinite Santa. We have both of them. Infinite Santa or Infinite Santa 8000 is fine.
Head over there, check out the story, leave comments, positive, negative, nitpicky, whatever, they're open for it.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Well, thank you again, guys.
Oh, thank you Summer.
Thank you, Summer.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Hey folks, this is Bruce Campbell, and this is my podcast. Thank you very much.
Hey, Summer Rapida here. Let's see, it's 5:30 my time. I'm driving to a half marathon up in Raleigh. And so that means probably, about 2:30 your time? I guess there's not a whole lot of chance of you picking up the phone when I call this time. Anyway, enjoying the interviews you've been doing lately. You've been doing a great job with it. Lord help us if Gary from Jacksonville's got the new number. And if he's put it on speed dial, we're in trouble. Anyway, I hope you're feeling better. You did sound like shit. No offense, but you already knew that. Anyway, hope you're feeling better up and around. Take care. Wrap it out.
Thanks for calling in, Rapid. It's appreciated. And for our listeners who are not in on the joke, yes, there was one time where Rapid Eye called the voicemail line number, and I happened to be online at the time and picked it up and surprised the living crap out of him. I thought it was funny. He's just like, wait, what? Hey, wait, it's really you? What? I'm like, yeah, sometimes the phone rings and I answer it. Go figure. But so I've learned to let people have their voicemail flow unless I'm expecting a call to do an interview. And his timing just happened to be perfect that day. But thank you, Rapid Eye, and everyone else for the well wishes. Yes, I am feeling a little better. As you could tell, my voice is a lot better than it was last week, but I still have a demon frog in the back of my throat somewhere, and it won't quite go away. I can't tell that it's affecting how my voice sounds, but it's annoying. Nevertheless, to start just talking about something, then all of a sudden feel like I'm going to choke. It's weird. And unfortunately, my favorite standby rum is not burning it out, so I may have to go move toward vodka. And if vodka doesn't kill it, I have no idea what I'm going to try. So any suggestions for burning out leftover crud from the back of one's throat after one's been sick, please let me know. I'm glad people are enjoying the interviews. I'm having fun finding out what motivates different storytellers. And that's sort of the theme I'm going to be going for with the new podcast over on writersafterdark.com, talking about not so much the craft of writing, but the appeal of storytelling, the need we have to both experience stories and tell stories. So over there, I'll be talking with not just writers, novelists, authors, but people who write short stories, people who write graphic novels and comics, people who write screenplays, people who write radio plays, because we have so many different storytelling mediums these days, and so many people are telling stories that I don't think it's not going to be easy to corral my curiosity to one niche, because I read books, I read fiction, I read science fiction, I read fantasy. I enjoy horror, but I like horror short stories more than I do horror novels. It's kind of strange. Go figure. I like nonfiction. I like getting behind the scenes of how the story of a movie was told. Because movies and even independent films, even short films that you find wherever, movies are the ultimate collaborative experience. And a lot of times that collaboration on such a massive scale dilutes the story. It affects the story. You have to make compromises in order to get something as large as a movie to be made. And unless you're talking about a major movie franchise that has a tie-in to a major book franchise like Harry Potter or James Bond, it's going to be tough to stay as true to those original stories as you would other books. I've heard that the Hunger Games movies divert a little bit from the stories in the books. I'm not sure if the same thing is true for the Maze Runner books. I'm curious to see what's going to happen with Shadowhunters, because I heard a lot of negative feedback about the movie adaptation for These Mortal Instruments when it came out. So I'm curious to see if they're going to fix that for the TV series when it starts in January. Should be interesting. But yeah, I, like many of you, I love story. I love experiencing stories. I enjoy writing stories. I don't get to write as much as I want to. I'm participating in NaNoWriMo this year, and I'm about 50 to 60% behind the pace I should be setting if I want to win this year. Point of fact, this is going to be my 8th NaNoWriMo, and I have yet to finish one. I have yet to reach the goal of 50,000 words, so that's just because reasons. No, work. Working, making the show for you guys, all sorts of other stuff. Just general things like life hitting you in the back of the head with a baseball bat at the most inconvenient moments possible. I guess that's why they call it life. But if the interviews are something you enjoy, thank you. Let me know. If there's something additional, extra, you'd like to hear me or any of the Slice of Sci-Fi crew talk about, again, let me know. You can reach us at the voicemail number that Rapid Eye called and Gary from Jacksonville called. That number is 602-635-6976. Leave a voicemail message, and if you happen to call during the day when I'm online and I pick up, don't be surprised. Say hi. It happens now and then. Just roll with it. You can also record a message and email that to me, or email a link to it to me. That email address is summer@sliceofscifi.com. And yeah, you can suggest an independent film or feature or, I don't know, a radio play. Go right ahead. Suggest something I might not have heard of. And we'll go from there. Upcoming shows, we are going to talk books again. Remember last year or earlier this year, we had the long discussion about Stephen Baxter's Proxima. Well, the conclusion of that series, that duology, Ultima, came out back in, I think, August or September. And it took this long for Tim and Jill to get through it. And we have a very, very deep discussion about Ultima coming up for you very soon. I have on the drawing board a series of interviews with the winners of the Death Scribe 2015 horror stage play competition. Death Scribe is held every year in Chicago in December, performed by the venerable members of Wildclaw Theater Group. And this year, we're going to talk to the directors and the 5 winning writers of their contest this year. So those people will have their stage plays performed by Wildclaw Theater. These directors are in the process of producing these short plays. And I honestly hope that we get to hear recordings of a couple of them. That's my interest. I love stage plays. I love the stuff that Earbud Theater does. I love audio dramas more than I do audio books, because you get a feel for the atmosphere as well as for the characters. So not being able to see Death Scribe performed, I'll live, but I would love to hear the recordings of those performances, just for my own curiosity. So who knows? Maybe we can arrange some snippets of some performances later. Who knows? We'll see. Thank you, everyone who's submitting donations to keep this show afloat. And for all the new Patreon subscribers, thank you so much for joining that particular train. For those who are interested in becoming patrons, that URL is patreon.com/sliceofscifi. You'll be able to support not only Slice of Sci-Fi, but also Kick-Ass Mystic Ninjas, yes, which is coming down the pike, and also Writers After Dark, which I do hope to get started by the end of the year. And yes, in case you hadn't yet noticed, one of the reward levels is the chance to become a guest ninja on an upcoming episode. So think about that. Think about what book or movie, old school, you would talk about, and we'll go from there. Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Let people know how you're enjoying the show, because that's, you know, feedback is key, crucial these days. Check us out on Twitter. Check us out on Google Plus. I really am not sure what's going on with the Facebook, but the links are there. The websites, come to the websites, leave comments. You can leave your own reviews on the reviews that we do. Anything you see that has a star rating on it, you can leave a comment and put your own star rating on it. So yeah, you can check out those reviews over at sliceofscifi.com, over at writersafterdark.com, and even itscomicbookday.com. We don't have any star ratings on the handful of reviews that are on Kick-Ass Mystic Ninjas, but never say never. We could start doing old school reviews over there in the future once I get that up and running again. So you never know. And yes, for both Writers After Dark and Kick-Ass Mystic Ninjas, if you're interested in doing a review of either a new book for Writers After Dark or a classic book for Kick-Ass Mystic Ninjas, email me and let me know. I might be able to accommodate posting that on either site for you. So who knows? We can have fun with that too. No word yet on the live show. Trust me. You guys will be the first to know once I get, for lack of a better phrase, once I get my act together where that's concerned. Thank you again to Tim Callender for the new artwork, and to Cy Fried, my favorite geek rock band, for the music that graces the airwaves accompanying this show. Again, thank you all for listening. I appreciate the feedback. I appreciate the donations that help keep this train going, because I am having fun putting this out for you. I just need a little help from all my friends to keep it going at a reasonable rate of speed. So thank you all again, and we will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.